The underwater city of Euclidea, the Gregory party finds life rather difficult. It wasn't any too pleasant to think that there was little hope of their rescue. But when they actually hear a radio broadcast with their own man, Johnson, in Los Angeles as the speaker, tell the world of their death, then things do look mighty bad. When the Euclideans started their artificial volcanic eruption and caused the rescue fleet to sail away from the position of the Magic Island, all hope of rescue was gone. Mrs. Gregory and Joan are resting in their comfortable quarters in the underwater city, while Jerry and Captain Bradford have started for the rocket ship laboratories. There the captain is to be allowed to study the construction and operation of these 1,000-mile-an-hour Euclidean planes. Jerry and the captain are standing near the doorway to the scientists' quarters, waiting for their guide.
I know it's all right to talk here. That girl submarine commander said it was. I guess she ought to know.
Okay, if you say so, Jerry, but it seems funny to be talking so freely out in this big open room after being so careful in our own quarters.
Well, there's so many funny things in this crazy place that I'm kind of getting used to
it. I'm afraid we'll never really learn to take all this for granted.
No, I guess not. But look here, Captain Bradford. How did it happen that old G-47 said I could go into the laboratory with you?
That surprised me too, son. Maybe he thought you'd be more likely to stay out of trouble there.
Yeah, well, I won't have much chance to do anything they don't like. With a room full of scientists watching me.
And don't try to do anything. You just keep your eyes open and learn all you can about this place. I'll be figuring how to get my instrument case aboard.
Oh, that small case that looks like a lady's overnight case?
Yep, that's just large enough to comfortably hold a pigeon.
And then one of these times you'll leave the instrument out of the case and have the pigeon in it, huh?
Right. But don't get impatient about it, Jerry. It may take weeks or months to get that chance.
Oh, yeah, I know. They'll search that instrument case pretty carefully the first time you take it on board.
Not only the first time, but a good many times. Our hope is that they'll finally get careless about looking at it, and I'll be able to smuggle the homing pigeon aboard a rocket ship for a test run.
And it'll have to be a long test run to get the pigeon near enough to Los Angeles so it'll have a chance to get home.
Yes, I'd like to be within a few hundred miles, or even better than that. And I think that can be arranged. G-47 is planning a series of night flights right over the principal cities of the United States.
But gee, Tex, he'll get caught at that.
I'm afraid he won't get caught. Those rocket ships are noiseless, or practically so, and they'll run without lights. I think it'll be altogether too easy to sneak up on Los Angeles, Chicago, or New York, and cruise around over them while G-47 studies the cities and maps the important points in each.
Gee, that sounds like they were getting ready for a war.
They are, a very definite war, though this will be the most peaceful, noiseless war the world has ever known.
Well, what do you think they'll do?
Just a few magnetic bombs in the cities. All traffic, transportation, telephone, electricity, everything will stop. And that will make the country just as helpless as if it was desert.
And then the Euclideans land and take over the country, huh?
Looks like that's the idea, Jerry. And not only our country. While that's going on in the United States, the same thing will be happening over Europe, Asia, Australia, Africa, and South America. If these Euclideans can do as they expect to do, and I think they can, 1 hour would be long enough for them to take over the control of the entire world.
Oh, boy. Wouldn't it be swell if we could stop them?
Yes, it would be, and we'll try it. But don't get too hopeful about the outcome.
Oh, I know it looks mighty hard. But we can do it. Mrs. Gregory's feeling pretty bad about things now, and, well, Joan's scared of these crazy Euclideans. But we'll do it some way.
I think so, too, son, but we've got a long way to go.
Quiet. Here comes one of the Euclideans.
Which one?
Well, I can't see yet. It's too dark back under that balcony.
Well, I suppose we'll be taken to the laboratory now.
Well, I hope so. Oh, boy! It's our friend, the girl submarine commander.
So it is.
That means we get a break.
I would not advise you to break anything.
How do you do, Commander?
Oh, I didn't mean to break anything. I meant that you'd give us a good break.
Your expressions mean little to me, Hall. And I am of the opinion they mean little at all times.
Oh, is that so?
Never mind, Jerry. Well, Commander, what are the orders?
You, Captain Bradford, and you, Hall, will accompany me to the transportation laboratory.
Oh, boy. And will we get a ride in a rocket ship?
I have been instructed to make a test flight with you two as passengers.
Well, we're ready.
We will go at once.
Oh, Jerry! Jerry!
Hey, there's Joan over there.
You will have no time to speak with her.
Wait a moment, Jerry. I am going with you.
You are not?
Sorry, Joan, but this is a business trip, and the commander has orders for only Jerry and myself.
Hey, Commander, couldn't you let Joan come along with us?
Silence, Hall. You will return to your quarters, Cleostra.
But I...
Best to do as she says, Joan, and I think you should stay with your mother anyhow.
But Mother is resting. I am of no value to her, and I do so want to see the laboratories with you.
Cleostra, if you continue, I will order your arrest and confinement.
Golly whiskers, Joan. What's the matter with you?
There is nothing the matter with me.
Well, there must be. You ought to know these Euclideans well enough to know they mean business and not keep on arguing with the commander.
You are being unusually sensible, Hall.
Jerry's right, Joan. You can't help us any, and I'd feel more comfortable if you stayed with Pat.
Very well, Captain. I will return to Mother and remain in our quarters.
Leostra is acting in a very peculiar manner.
Oh, maybe she's afraid of something.
No, I guess she just worried about everything and thought she'd like to go with us.
Enough of this useless speculation as to what Cleostra might think. Come, we will enter the laboratories. As we enter, you will preserve silence unless directly addressed by one of the scientists.
We won't say anything.
I will open the panel.
Oh, boy. What a room.
Silence. You will follow me. The larger ships ranged along this side of the chamber are submarines. On that side are rocket ships. One moment while I observe our surroundings. Yes, we are alone in this section. You may speak.
It's about time. I was going to bust if I couldn't say something pretty soon.
I don't blame you, Jerry. This is quite a sight.
There are 25 submarines and 50 rocket ships.
Oh, boy, 75 of these things. And they don't half fill this room. Whoever dug these caves sure had plenty of time.
These caves are natural, except for the improvements installed by the Euclideans.
Well, Jerry knows that, Commander.
Yes?
Mind if I ask some questions?
Proceed.
And when you get done, I'll ask some.
Silence, Hall. Proceed, Captain Bradford.
Well, we're familiar with the submarines, as you know.
As all Euclidea knows, only too well.
Yeah, we sure put one over on all of you when we swiped that other sub.
Never mind that now, Jerry. We're here to learn all we can about this place.
G-47 has informed us that you will aid him in certain tests. With a rocket ship?
So he said, but I thought he meant rocket planes, not submarines.
These rocket ships are both air and water vessels.
Huh? These little submarines fly?
Precisely.
But, Commander, there isn't anything about them that looks like a flying machine.
They are not airplanes in the ordinary sense of the word. They are rocket planes propelled by a continuous stream of compressed gas bombs until they reach the static zenith, at which time they derive their power from the natural electrical impulses in the rarefied atmosphere.
She's talking to you now, Captain. I can't understand any of it.
I'm not much better off, son, but perhaps the commander will explain.
The explanation will be made by one more proficient in the higher reaches of science. Cheops, the master builder of Euclidea, will explain the construction of the rocket plane.
Hey, how soon do we see Cheops?
You may have that honor now.
Well, how do you do?
You will not be needed further, Commander.
Very well. I will be in my quarters if you need me.
How soon do we see the rocket ships, Mr. Cheops?
The term Mr. is superfluous. I am referred to as Cheops, Master Builder of Euclidea.
Yeah, I know. Your grandfather built the pyramids or something.
Never mind that now, Jerry.
Sorry.
I should like to inspect the rocket planes as soon as possible.
We will inspect them at this time. G-47 has ordered that you be given a complete explanation as to the mechanical principles involved.
Yes, the electrical principles also, if you don't mind. I can visualize the possibilities of the compressed gas in the form of rocket power, but the use of atmospheric electrical energy is something I'm not at all clear on.
That explanation must come from Thales. He will join us later and explain the electrical devices. It is my task to acquaint you with the physical features of this rocket ship. Before we enter, you will observe the fins set into the sides of the ship.
I was noticing those things. What good are they?
They are, to use your worldly description of them, simply wings.
Wings?
Those things are wings folded back into the body of this submarine?
Precisely.
And this machine actually flies?
This rocket ship will consistently maintain a speed of 1,000 miles per hour and has a cruising range, when fully fueled, of 10,000 miles.
10,000 miles? Golly whiskers. Enough to fly all over the United States and back here again.
Just what I was thinking, Jerry.
And possibly what the designer had in mind.
Yes, quite possibly. The ship works as a submarine with its wings folded and an airship with them extended.
Precisely. Precisely.
Well, we're over 400 feet below the surface of the ocean. I'd think that thing would have to be made mighty heavy or wouldn't stand the water pressure enough long enough to get it under the surface.
Yes, I wondered about that too, Jerry.
You are quite observant, Hall. In fact, that matter of pressure is something we have not been able to overcome. And the weight of such a ship, even a ship made of the finest Euclidean metals, would prove too great for the best results in the air. Therefore, these ships are carried in floating pressure chambers to within 5 fathoms of the surface and there released.
And then at the end of a flight, they are landed on the water and returned to the lock.
Precisely. We will now enter the rocket ship. If you don't mind, I will proceed, making the necessary explanations as we go.
Oh, boy. This is sure some rocket ship. Gee, the whole inside of the thing is full of gadgets.
Plenty of instruments, all right, Jerry, and everything's made of copper, isn't it?
The entire structure is tempered copper, amalgamated with aluminum. These various controls you see are used in navigation, the action closely paralleling that of a submarine.
You fly this thing just like you sail it on the water or under the water?
Precisely, and at a speed of 1,000 miles an hour. The displacement approaches that of a boat of similar weight in water.
How soon am I allowed to take a trip in one of these things?
Your first flight is scheduled to begin with the appearance of Thales. We will accompany you.
Gee, Tex, 10,000 miles we can go. Let's fly over Los Angeles.
I'm afraid that wouldn't be allowed, Jerry.
You are quite sure it would not be allowed, Captain Bradford. The ship has a cruising range of 10,000 miles, but you will find that it is fueled for a 500-mile run and no more. If you attempt to escape, you would leave us only one course. The escaping ship would be overtaken and destroyed. And it seems hardly likely that you'd have time to leave the ship.
You sure must want us here.
At least, we do not want you